Blessings and Disasters by Alexis Okeoo. Summary of Blessings and Disasters, a story of Alabama. Introduction and the author's perspective. Blessings and Disasters by Alexis Okeoo is a multi-generational exploration of Alabama that seeks to uncover an alternate history of the state, moving the footnotes and exceptions of the official narrative into the main text. Okeoo, a foreign correspondent who spent a decade writing about Africa, noticed a jarring similarity between how that continent is stereotyped and how the American Deep South is portrayed. Outsiders often view Alabama as a lost cause that is too racist, religious, and backward to understand without intervention. However, the author argues that Alabama is home to a complex reality where the best and worst of the American democratic experiment are on full display. Growing up in Montgomery, the author's childhood was defined by the geographic and social boundaries of the city, from racing her family's red Plymouth Voyager minivan to the mall to learning the importance of grace and social standing in everyday interactions. Okeoo's own origin story as the daughter of Nigerian immigrants places her both inside and outside the traditional black-white racial binary of the state. Her parents met as college students at Alabama State University, a historically black college, after immigrating separately in the 1970s. This background provided a refuge of pride in a Nigerian story that predated their American one, even as they seized opportunities in a state known for its racial troubles. When the author left for Princeton University in 2002, she realized she was an anomaly, one of the few black Southern students on a campus where symbols of status like designer quilted handbags and boarding school pedigrees were foreign to her. Her identity was often met with dumbstruck pity or wariness by those who associated Alabama only with fire hoses and lynchings. Part 1, Origin Stories. The First Inhabitants and the Powhatch Band of Creek Indians. The narrative begins with a look at the first inhabitants, the Muscogee Creek people, who settled in Alabama in the mid-16th century. They were hunters and foragers drawn to the waterways, establishing a matriarchal society where children belonged to their mother's clan. The European settlers who arrived later called this nation the Creek Confederacy. The author profiles Stephanie Bryan, the first female leader of the Powhatch Band of Creek Indians, the only federally recognized tribe in Alabama. Stephanie grew up in a people in crisis, where her tribe was often treated as a phantom limb of the American story. The Powhatch Creek are the descendants of Friendly Creek, who sided with the U.S. government during the Creek War of 1813 to 1814. While thousands of other Creek were forced onto the Death March of the Trail of Tears, a small group managed to cling to the land in southern Alabama. Stephanie's grandmother, Looney May, taught her to endure insults and remain proud of her heritage, even when the tribe was impoverished. The tribe's survival was due to being adept at business and diplomatic relationships, leading to their eventual federal recognition in 1984. Today, the tribe has built a billion-dollar gambling empire through Wind Creek casinos, using their wealth to ensure their people can never be told what to do again. Confederate memory and the indecent pride of the past. The book explores the enduring influence of the Confederacy through Calvin Chappelle, the director of Confederate Memorial Park. Calvin grew up in a family obsessed with history. His father, Chip, took Calvin and his brother to Civil War reenactments starting in 1989. Calvin views his ancestors with reverence, arguing that while slavery was wrong, the past should not be judged by today's moral standards. This selective memory is a hallmark of the Lost Cause narrative, which was largely forged by the United Daughters of the Confederacy, UDC, in the late 19th century. The UDC sought to shield children from falsehoods that associated the planter class with racism or violence, instead promoting a pristine history of self-rule and cultural pride. The author contrasts this with the reality of Montgomery's past as a major hub for the domestic slave trade. By 1860, the city had more slave depots than schools or churches, yet commemorative markers for this history were not placed until 2013. The Equal Justice Initiative, EJI, eventually established a memorial devoted to over 4,400 victims of lynching between 1877 and 1950. The memorial features 805 steel monuments suspended over the ground, evoking the image of bodies hanging from trees. This space serves as a stark reminder that the story of glory and redemption in the civil rights movement was not easily earned. The same dream, schooling and segregation. In the 1990s, Montgomery's neighborhoods and schools remained starkly divided by race and class. The author's parents were highly protective, driving her across town to an Eastside elementary school rather than the one for which she was zoned. Moving East was the author's family's version of the Alabama dream, a stucco house on a cul-de-sac in a gated community, proving they had made it. This desire for stability mirrored the aspirations of Black Alabamians after emancipation, who viewed voting as the primary means to acquire and keep land. Despite a brief period of whiplash political freedom during Reconstruction, when Black men like Jeremiah Harrelson and James Rapier were elected to Congress, white Alabamians used obscene violence and fraud to retake control. By 1891, Jim Crow legislation put segregation into law, and the Bloody Lounge County earned its name through a sustained siege of murders and evictions against Black residents. This history of entitlement to the land and defiance continues to define the Alabamian psyche, where the state motto is Audimus Jura Nostra Defendere. We dare defend our rights, part 2, finding a self. Religion, between blessing and disaster. The Black and white churches in Alabama served as parallel, nesting dolls, of social and political organizing. For the author, church was a social mecca, though she daydreamed about the perceived adventure and sin of white megachurches like Fraser. Alabama is part of a Southern Christian tribe, where evangelical tenets, fevered sermons, and ecstatic experiences are foundational. This religious identity often manifests in a shared social conservatism. The majority of both Black and white Alabamians historically supported making abortion illegal. The state's religious history is deeply intertwined with its racial history. The Southern Baptist Convention was formed in 1845 after splitting with Northern Baptists over their opposition to slavery, which Southern leaders called an institution of heaven. While the convention apologized for this history in 1995, recent leaders like Ed Litton have continued to struggle with how to address race within the denomination. For many Alabamians, fearing God's wrath remains a primary way to keep people in line, even as they navigate the contradictions of their political and personal lives. The forced closeness of Alabama life. The author describes a forced closeness in Alabama, where the fictions of color kept Black and poor white people from uniting, yet the shared landscape was shaded with intimacy and an assumption of mutual understanding. This is illustrated through Tina Johnson, a white woman from the mountains of northern Alabama. Tina's life was defined by a culture where sex was never discussed, and women were expected to submit to the desires of men. She suffered horrific sexual abuse from her uncles as a child, an experience she hit back at by striking one uncle with an iron skillet. Tina's mother, Catherine, was a resourceful but mean woman who married 6 times and taught Tina that her value lay in her ability to use those men. Tina eventually found herself in the law office of Roy Moore to sign over custody of her son. Moore, then a prominent lawyer, groped her as she left the office, an incident that was part of a lifelong pattern of men taking what was hers without asking. Tina's story highlights the double terror of being a woman in a patriarchal society where powerful men were rarely held accountable. Mary MacDonald and the Black Belt. Mary MacDonald, born in 1962 in Lowndes County, grew up on land her family had held since 1869. Her parents, Patty May and Leon Sr., were activists who hosted SNCC workers and survived a 1965 Knight Rider attack where bullets shattered their son's crib. Mary's life was defined by a sense of duty to her mother and her disabled brother, Walter. She briefly moved to Michigan in 1979 to see the world, but returned to Hayneville because the city was too cold, and she was in love with a man named Mark. After Mark left her for another woman and eventually died in prison, Mary focused on her work as a clinic coordinator and raising her niece, Ophelia, as her own daughter. She became an accidental activist after joining the fight for a Black mayor in Hayneville in 1999. Mary's story reflects the resilience of those who stayed in the Black Belt, viewing their land as a hard-won freedom that was worth fighting for. Part 3, Making a Home. The Poarch Creek and Alabama Neighbors. The Poarch Creek tribe's relationship with the state is described as antagonistic, yet civil, with the tribe branding themselves as Alabama Natives, Alabama Neighbors. Stephanie Bryan's leadership has focused on diversifying the tribe's businesses, including buying hotels near Disney World and in the Caribbean. The tribe has used its gaming empire to fund essential services for the entire Escambia County, including police and fire stations, yet the state continues to challenge their sovereignty through lawsuits over taxes and gambling. Stephanie argues that the tribe's success should be a point of pride for the state, as they have provided thousands of jobs and millions in tax revenue. New and newer arrivals, immigrant stories. The 1965 Immigration and Nationality Act transformed Alabama by allowing skilled workers and those with family ties to enter the country, leading to the arrival of the author's parents. Her father, David, initially came to study economics and write for the campus newspaper, eventually becoming a professor at Alabama State University. Her mother, Regina, arrived to study broadcasting, though she initially found Black Alabamian students unwelcoming and had to find her community among fellow Nigerians. By the 1990s, a newer wave of arrivals, Latino migrants, became essential to Alabama's agriculture and poultry industries. Brandon Vela, who was brought to Alabama from Mexico as a baby, grew up working in the fields, picking peaches, blueberries, and tomatoes. He describes the physical toll of the work: suffocating heat, backbreaking labor, and nails packed with dirt. Brandon's life was upended in 2011 by HB 56, a restrictive anti-immigration bill that encouraged self-deportation. Despite the fear and the inability to get a driver's license or financial aid, Brandon became an activist, speaking at rallies to reclaim his identity as an Alabamian. He eventually achieved success, buying a home for his parents and becoming a corporate banker. The fight for accountability. Tina Johnson's decision to speak out against Roy Moore during his 2017 Senate race was driven by a desire to support his other accusers. She faced intense backlash, and her house was burned down in 2018 in what she believes was an arson attack. While the Me Too movement provided a brief moment of currency for her story, Tina felt abandoned once the news cycle moved on, realizing that the women we most wanted to believe seemed to be white middle-class and wealthy women. Her husband, Morris, a Black man, also faced humiliation and shame in their community. Tina remains in Gadsden, refusing to be pushed from her home and declaring, "You fight, part 4, present day." Betrayal of home, the environmental and health crisis. The Black Belt is currently facing an environmental crisis where the dense clay soil refuses to absorb sewage, leading to widespread septic failure. Raw sewage often runs straight into their yards, leading to the return of hookworm and other tropical parasites once thought eradicated. Mary McDonald and activist Catherine Flowers have spent years documenting this sanitation disaster, which state officials often treat as a matter of personal responsibility rather than public health. This crisis made the COVID-19 pandemic particularly deadly in Lowndes County, which had the highest per capita death rate in the state. Pamela Rush, a woman who lived in a mold-filled trailer without electricity in her daughter's room, became a symbol of this crisis before dying of the virus in 2020. The persistence of the past and recent shifts. Alabama's legal and political systems continue to reflect its exclusionary roots. The state has some of the most violent and overcrowded prisons in the country, and its property tax structure remains biased against public education for the poor. Voting rights also remain a primary battleground. Following the 2013 Shelby County versus Holder decision, Alabama closed dozens of polling places in districts with high Black populations and implemented restrictive photo ID laws. However, the summer of 2020 brought significant changes. Montgomery elected its first Black mayor, Stephen Reed, exactly 200 years after the city's founding. Under Reed, the city began renaming streets named after Confederates, such as renaming Jeff Davis Avenue to Fred D. Gray Avenue, and removed a statue of Robert E. Lee that had stood in front of a high school since 1955. This shifting of the narrative is part of a broader effort to celebrate real heroes and acknowledge the fraud and violence that shape the state's current constitution. The author concludes by reflecting on Auntie Style, a vibrant and resilient mode of Black womanhood she learned from her mother's Nigerian social circle. This volcanic and inebriating presence represents a way of belonging that refuses to disappear. For OKOO, Alabama remains a land of inherent contradictions, a place that has both stunned and blinded those who call it home, yet continues to demand their loyalty and their stories. This summary is for educational purposes only. This audio is exclusively created for AfriSummary.com. Thank you.